welcome, everybody. This is a call, Nine Steps to Heaven, a live introductory meditation and conversation between spiritual teacher and healer Kehan Godsey and myself. I am a New Thought author and editor named Stephanie Gunning, and we put this together in order to invite you to close your eyes and wake up to bliss and creativity. So this is an introduction to a nine-week meditation course that Kehan and I are going to offer, with him leading meditations, starting on July 30th. Kehan and I met about 6 months ago when a couple of mutual acquaintances connected us to each other. People who didn't know each other very well somehow gave us each other's names, and so we ended up on the telephone together because Kehan was interested in writing a book. And actually, he had a couple of different ideas for books, and we started talking, and one of them was The Nine Steps to Heaven. And the more we talked about it, the more I became convinced that I needed to experience this for myself. And so actually, I spent about 11 weeks, I've been 2 weeks off of it, about 11 weeks ago, I started a nine-week meditation series that Kehan created, and I would do 5 days of a specific meditation that he did with me, and then I would take 2 days off, and then I would do five and take 2 days off. And the time went very quickly, and it was really amazing to me how it shifted my perspective of what I was doing. I'm not saying I'm suddenly, you know, the Buddha or anything like that, but maybe I am. So, you know, this is about finding a way to really see yourself as a spirit. Now, Kehan, why don't you tell us about your background a little bit, because I don't think I'm going to really do it justice.
As everybody is aware of, a spiritual journey doesn't really start with finding your teacher. And it did not start for me like that either. I believe you have to spend some time getting ready for your teacher. And I have to say that by the time I found my teacher in, when was it, 1997, that according to him, I've been working on it a long time. In 1997, I started taking some meditation classes and healing classes in a place in Berkeley called Berkeley Psychic Institute. And after that, I went to a place in San Rafael, California, which is not far away from Berkeley. It's in San Francisco Bay Area. And I met my teacher in a place called Church of Asclepion Healing. I basically started taking clairvoyant classes. I became a clairvoyant student, and I took that class for about a year, and I learned how to see energy and read aura, and I took some other meditation and healing classes while I was there. And then I moved away from San Francisco Bay Area, moved to California Central Valley in Modesto, where I live right now, and then I started teaching by myself. A lot of it was my students were local or coming to my place, and I had the class in where I live, in my house. And then I started having more and more students, so I started teaching mainly on the phone and do long distance healings and teaching meditation and teaching some healing. About 4 years ago, I noticed that a lot of people come to me, ask me the same questions over and over again, and the questions were mainly about, I would like to change my life, but I'm afraid. And this fear basically became interesting to me. And as I was talking to them and I was giving them, at least directing them to find their own answers, I decided to write these answers down. And I wrote them down, and then the idea came to me that why don't I try to make it a book? And one of my friends told me, look at the workbook, that's going to be more fun. And that was when I started looking at these series of meditation as a form of workbook, that you would actually follow a path to increase your vibration, to change your vibration, to go from, for example, black to purple or purple to red, just change the vibration from where you are. And it led me to these 9 steps. And then that's when I met you, and I hadn't really created the meditations for them yet. I just was looking at the steps, and I want every step to have a meditation that would last a while. And then I decided that that 1 week would be perfect. And basically the rest of it was co-created with you, that you gave me a lot of the ideas of how to go about it. And then we practiced it together, and that was a real learning process also for me.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that you got to a point where you think you might be Buddha, I think that's a success.
Or else it just shows you...
Well, if you don't deny that there's a possibility, then I think that you're a winner in my book.
Okay, well, thank you. Appreciate that. Well, the one thing that Kahan hasn't said is that he's Persian, and I always tell people that you're the new Rumi. And so I want to share quickly my favorite Rumi quote, which is, "Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I will meet you there." And that's what I think we're doing with these meditations. We're going to this field, which is a field of energy. That's a place where we can all be together and communicate, and work on remembering our true nature. That's my experience of what this process is. Would you say that's accurate?
I say it's very accurate. You know, what I would try that to do with these 9 meditations, and actually we're going to try a little bit of it today, is to go to a playing field, go to a sandbox. It's a kindergarten space. That's what they told me when they taught me meditation. The reason we call it a kindergarten space is because we are not afraid to play with these toys and have our own experiences, as opposed to look for somebody else's experience. There is another realm of existence besides the physical realm of existence. And our playground is in that field. And that's where we're going to go with our meditations. And that was happened when we close our eyes to the physical realm of existence. And then we step into a new realm of existence, which is the realm of imagery. We can create and destroy anything we want. And that's where the beginning of all creation. Everything you see, it was somebody's imagination. It started with an imagination. It started with an image. And then it became an object. We brought it to the physical reality. We own it in the physical reality. So that's the space we're going to go play with.
So if this is called 9 Steps to Heaven, what is heaven?
Heaven to me is where there's no fear. Heaven is where we do not have any inhibitions of being who we are. So once we get rid of our fears, once we get rid of the lies, then we are back in heaven. The only reason we think we're not in heaven is because we think we're sinners. And that's the biggest lie of all. We were not created sinners, and we will never sin. We cannot sin against all there is. That's impossible. So that's the biggest lie we have to get rid of, and then we will realize that there is nothing to be fearful of. When you have no fears, where are you but heaven?
So many of the most popular spiritual books today talk about having and how you can attract more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What are you talking about?
Well, I don't think... I'm talking about being. I have nothing against having. It's just that I'm so much more attracted by being. And really, being and having, they are not different from each other. The element that comes in and confuses the subject here is that in our social agreements, we have something that we have to believe in, and that is doing. We are taught that we have to do our way to everything, which is another big lie. You cannot do loving. You cannot do wealth. You have to be wealthy. You have to be in love. So everything starts with being. We are taught that if we want to have wealth, for example, you have to do all these things, and then those things will let you have these other things, and then you can allow yourself to be wealthy. Well, this is not true, because there are a lot of people who do a lot of things every day. They work very hard, but they are not wealthy. there are people who have a lot of things, but they are not wealthy. So wealthy is a state of being. So I direct my students to look at themselves and look at who they are, the process of being. And once you know who you are, and once you know you are a spirit, everything that there is to have is yours. It's made for you. The universe is in you.
You say this a lot, you know, that we're spirits with bodies.
Yes, well, you know, my favorite saying is the one that says, we are not humans looking for a spiritual experience, we are spirits going through a human experience. And that's where we have to distinguish between having a body and being a body. Because if you see yourself as being the body, then the fear is justified. You are vulnerable, you can be destroyed. But if you see yourself as a spirit, including a body, then your body is what you want it to be, which is a vehicle that creates experiences for you, that provides the experiences of the things that you have knowledge of. If you see yourself as who you really are, then you can create your life that would validate who you are. If you fail to see yourself as who you are, then you end up picking up energy here and there and create your life from those energies that are not there to validate you. They are there to validate the owner of that energy. You wonder why I hate my day today, because where did you create it from? Did you create it from an energy that represents who you are, or you created from somebody else's pain? So being aware of who we are allows us to create our day, to create our life in a way that would validate us. And once we get that validation, we grow as a result of that validation.
I have found in the past 9 weeks, or 11 weeks rather, that I'm more relaxed. I'm saying this after a kind of stressful week too, but now that I'm on the other end of it, I can say that I'm really being more compassionate to myself and more relaxed, and I think that's healthy, and I think I'm making some healthier choices, for instance, in relationship to my body, you know, what I eat, what I drink, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. Well, you know, it really is about your agreement with your body. I remember the two of us, we talked once about the three agreements. Once we decide to have a body and start a new life as a spirit, we enter three different agreements. We look at three different agreements. One of them is our agreement with God. That's the agreement that we enter into to live a life, to live the life that we're going to create. The other agreement is the agreement with our parents, for them to create the body for us. We choose our parents to kind of bring us into this realm of existence on a physical level. And the third one is our agreement with our body, to honor our body, because our body is the vehicle that's going to create that experience, that life that we're going to live through. If you look at most people, the main concentration of their energy is in their agreement with their parents, which is basically our social agreements. That means we honor our social agreements more than we honor ourselves. We spend most of our day being who everybody else expects us to be, rather than being who we really are. And that's where you were just talking about, that you honor your body more. That means you brought some of your energy that you had left in honoring other people's image of you to your own body. You have more of your attention in your agreement with your body, in honoring your body and allowing it to create experiences that you would like to experience.
Yeah, actually, for me, another thing is doing these meditations has sort of flipped who's primary in my life. And I know it sounds a little selfish, but I'm putting myself first a little bit more. And I've felt that there were always a lot of ways that I gave myself away. Just maybe it's all happening internally to me that I felt that I was giving myself away. But I do feel as if I brought energy back into my system. And, you know, although some of what I'm doing may be still a little awkward, there is some readjustment happening, and I think it'll get more smoother as time goes on, you know.
Well, I have no problem with being selfish. I think being selfish is good. It's just when we get to the definition of self that we might differ. I think the definition of self could include everybody, the self with the big S, rather than, if that's in a communication source, that's when you see what is good for you is good for everybody. But the other way, if you look at it, that there is, you look at it as in a space of scarcity, that what I'm going to have, nobody else is going to have. Like, there's only $1 and I'm going to take it. If not, somebody else will have it. That is the selfish way of looking at things. That's the ego speaking. But at the same time, there is a big self that includes everybody. How can you be good to everybody if you're not good to yourself? If you realize what's good for you, then it's good for everybody else. So when you're doing good to yourself, you're doing good to the universe. So in that sense, that selfishness is rewarded through its resonance through the universe.
So how does doing a meditation help us get into this grander perspective?
The way it helps us is takes our attention and brings it in. We are always avoiding who we are, looking outside. We are looking for things that causes our life to be so. There is nothing out there that's causing our life to be so. We are looking at what we pick up, we project it out, we look at it and we say, I don't like it. Well, this is what you picked up. People would come to me for years and they would basically ask, when I turn on my computer, I don't like the picture that comes up, can you please buy me a new monitor? And I was telling them, the monitor has nothing to do with it. The answer is in the programming. Let's push start and go to preferences and change those. Everything is inside. So when we meditate, we close our eyes. Where do we go? We go inside, looking to reset our preferences. And then wake up. Wake up to a new reality. Wake up to see that what's out there is not really out there. It's just a reflection of what's in here. And once you realize that, you can manifest anything out there, because you can project it.
So this course that you're going to teach with me is going to cover 9 subjects. And what I'd like to do is I would like to ask you just to say a little bit about each one of them. So the first week's meditation is, you are a creator.
That's the basis of anything. We are not going anywhere if we see ourselves as an effect and what is outside of us as a cause. That's where we're talking about, you are a creator. You are not a victim. So in order to take the first step, you have to say hello to yourself as the creator of your life. The creator created you as an image of himself, as a creator, not as a victim. You were not created as a victim. You were created as a creator. And you have to recognize that. That's the biggest blasphemy if you see yourself as a victim. You were not created as a victim. So that meditation is all about. It's 10 minutes of looking at yourself as a creator. So you'll just stop looking outside of yourself for a cause and see yourself as an effect and reverse this picture. You are the cause. Everything else is an effect.
Okay, and week 2 will be, you are perfect in the present. Now, I know that there are a lot of people have big trouble with the word perfect.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Yes, me too. I know at least one other person on this call who does. I've heard a few rants about that. So what does that mean?
That means you're perfect. That's exactly what it means. But perfect where? Perfect in present time.
Ah.
Okay? That's the clue. You are perfect in present time. You see, if we look at outside of ourselves as a cause, we are always defining ourselves with the things that are outside of ourselves. I am taller than Stephanie. I am shorter than Joe. I have more money than Jim. I have less money than Jack. We're always comparing ourselves. I am fatter than this. I'm skinnier than that. There is always, we define ourselves by looking outside of ourselves. If you define yourself by who you are, you realize that the perfection created you perfect. And where you are in present time is exactly where you need to be to have the experience that you wished to have. yesterday you wanted to have a day like this. Well, there you go. You are perfect in present time. Would you like to change that? First, recognize that you have created this and it's perfect. If you do that, then you have the power to change it for tomorrow.
So week three, the meditation is you are not your body.
You are not your body is just about that. It's about you are not your car. You have your car, but it's not you. It's a vehicle you use. If you think you are your body, you have to live the rest of your life in fear because your body can be damaged. You can lose it. You can lose pieces of it. But you are not your body. You include your body. I submit to you, you are not Stephanie. The real you is the one who is experiencing being Stephanie for a while. So once you realize that you are not your body is a part of you that you own, that will be anything you want it to be. When you realize that, you gain a lot of power because you step out of fear. You know that who you really are is impossible to destroy. Who you really are is the essence of universe.
So week four is your vision sees more than your eyes.
Our eyes only see what we want them to see. Look at how much judgment it is in what you see with your eyes. It's because you have already those judgments sitting there waiting to see those things that you want to see so you can judge them. But once you close your eyes and look at energy, then your vision takes over and sees what there really is to be seen. This physical realm of existence is just a manifestation of what we would like to project. And then basically we decide what we want to see and then we see it. But that doesn't mean it's really what is there to be seen.
You are one with all there is.
This is the one about competition and communication. You see, if you don't realize that you are everything and you are one with everything, you're one with everybody, then you have to be either better than them or worse than them. That's where the competition starts. That's the meaning of competition. I'm better than Stephanie. Stephanie is better than me. And now we can't communicate anymore. We just have to fight over to see which one is better, which one is worse.
Okay.
If I allow Stephanie to be who she is and say hello to her the way she is, I will say, hello, Stephanie. I accept the way you are. I am Kehan. I'm not trying to make you a better Stephanie. I will just observe you be who you are. Okay, you can do this with everything. Once you decide not to get into competition with other things, once you decide not to judge and decide you are better or you are worse, then you are able to extend yourself to everybody and everything because you're not judging them to be not worthy of your love. So that's when communication starts. That's when I stop thinking that I can be a better Stephanie than Stephanie.
The week six meditation is you have no problems.
Exactly. Exactly. Problems are nothing but a result of judgment. I see Stephanie walk in the door and I immediately judge her shoes as being ugly and I create a problem. And I put that problem in between me and Stephanie and use that to refuse my love to her.
What do you mean? I can't wear my purple Crocs in a restaurant?
Each time we judge, and it's not only judging others, we do that more with ourselves than anybody else. Each time we judge somebody or we judge ourselves, either saying this is bad or this is good or this is not good enough, either way we create this thing called a problem and we use this to put it in between ourselves and the other person or in between ourselves and ourselves to give us a reason not to extend our love to that person. If you say hello to everybody the way they are, if you don't get into competition with them, you don't need any problems.
Well, that's that field that Rumi was talking about.
Exactly.
Wrongdoing and right doing.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Once you go beyond this barrier of judgment, then you can extend your love to anybody. I mean, there's this beautiful saying in Course in Miracles that says, we always look to understand people first before we decide if they are worthy of our love. But how can you understand anybody before you love them?
It's interesting because you also do your meditations from that place right at the beginning.
Exactly.
Like, that's where it happens from.
Once you go to the center of your head, once you go to sixth chakra, that's the place of no judgment. It's only observation. You only see energy. You only see color. And there is no judgment. There is no red is better than brown or blue is better than green. It's just colors.
Mm.
There is no Kahan is better than Stephanie. We're just colors.
So week seven is you can choose joy.
At any instant, at any moment, you can even practice that. You can sit in a room and close the door and give yourself 5-10 minutes to settle into quietness and practice and see how you can be choosing joy, choosing sadness, choosing joy, choosing sadness. You can do that. And once you realize that you really have that power, you can practice it. You can go around all day and say, I'm going to choose the joy, you know, rather than allow everybody else around you to choose sadness for you. You can actually practice this power and choose joy.
I notice for myself that sometimes my emotional responses are habitual, and so it can be a habit for me to be angry or a habit for me to be sad.
Those habits, you did not pick them up in half a second. You practiced them for years. That's why they're habits. And now, as you meditate, for example, in this course for 9 weeks, you change a lot of habits. Because you practice actually exercising your power. You practice making a deliberate decision rather than just go with what you've been used to or what you have been practicing for years. You change your habits by practice.
So week eight is you can experience forgiveness.
Forgiveness to me is the physical form of love. On the physical realm of existence, the closest we can come to experience love is forgiveness. Again, quoting the Course in Miracles about forgiveness. Forgiveness is not recognizing a sin. I don't come to you and say, Stephanie, do you remember you did that really nasty thing to me last week? I'm going to forgive you for that. That's not forgiveness. I'm re-recognizing your sin. I'm re-emphasizing your sin. I'm not forgiving you. I'm saying you did something really awful, but whatever. That's not forgiving. Forgiving when I come to you and I say, Stephanie, you never did anything to me. I release that. I release that event. I let it go. That's forgiveness. If we can do that, we experience the closest thing to love. If we don't, we chain ourselves to that thing that we call sin, and we never let go. When I see you as sinful, I'm looking at myself as sinful. How can I go to heaven if I think I'm sinful? I have to forgive my brother in order to be able to take the next step.
And this also includes forgiving yourself.
Exactly. Everything is about yourself. When I come to you and I refuse to forgive you, what am I doing? I'm not forgiving myself. I'm chaining myself to your sin. I'm creating a sin for you and I'm chaining myself to it. So basically, I'm not releasing myself. You see, the best example of that is the crucifixion of Christ. Crucifixion was about death, was going to kill him. But what did he do? He looked at it with forgiveness, and crucifixion became resurrection. Death became everlasting life.
I just have to point out that even though you're talking about sin and you just mentioned crucifixion, this is not a Christian meditation program.
No, I'm not Christian.
But
but Christ's force, I will submit to you that, I mean, even if you look at Muslim literature. I was born a Muslim. Christ's force is as a healing power, as a forgiving power, is mentioned many times in Muslim literature also. It's not about Jesus per se, it's about the Christ force. It's about what God gives us so we can use in our vision to see beyond the event that we hold so dearly and chain ourselves to it.
And it goes back to that whole thing about being a spirit.
Exactly.
And not a body.
Exactly. You see, any event that happens in our life happens so we can experience something. If we hold on to the event itself, we will deny ourselves the experience that will result from it. We just get stuck in the event. We have to forgive the event. We have to release that event so we can have the experience and grow as a result of it. And that's what forgiveness is all about.
Do you know what? I can feel the meditation about to happen, but just before it does, week 9 is you are in heaven because you never left it.
And it's true. We are children of God. The kingdom of heaven is in us. We have nowhere else to be as spirits but heaven. It's just that by thinking we are our bodies, by believing what we see as the result of our own projection, we see ourselves as not worthy of heaven. And then we think we're not there. We can convince ourselves we're not there, but we're always there. There is nowhere but heaven to be. There is not like there is heaven and there is a place that's not heaven. There is not like there is life and there is death. There is nothing but life. How can life have an end? It never has a beginning. It doesn't have an end. There is nowhere that is not heaven. Heaven was created as all there is. We are always in heaven. We just have to wake up to it. And the way to wake up is to close our eyes.
So let's
that
do
I know.
The meditation. Let's go to the playground and
okay.
Play.
Okay. Okay, what I would like to do is first I want to say a couple of words about what we're going to do with this meditation. The meditations that we're going to do in the 9 steps to heaven, the 9 meditations, they are all about 10 minutes long, and I made them that way so we can... We have to get out of that space of, oh, I don't have time to meditate. Okay, anybody can say, I have 10 minutes. That's one thing. And then we're going to use a few tools, a few toys, let's say, to play with in those meditations. And in this meditation that I'm going to lead you through right now, I'm going to introduce you to those tools and toys. So that's what we're going to do. I would like everybody to sit in a chair or on a couch or somewhere where you sit upright and you're comfortable and that you have your feet flat on the ground. If you don't cross your legs, it would help you ground better if you have your feet flat on the ground. So as you're doing this, would you please go ahead and take a deep breath and close your eyes. And as you close your eyes, would you please take another breath? Breathing is a good thing. As a general rule, each time we want to do something, the first thing we do, we hold our breath. But this work, we want to do it with the body, even though it's spiritual work, even though it's at no effort, we would like to do it with the body. So would you please validate your body and breathe? Now, I invite you, please, to find the center of your head. A very good way of finding it is to imagine drawing a line from the top of one ear to the top of the other ear that crosses your head. And then go ahead and imagine drawing another line from the middle of your eyebrows to the back of your head straight. And where these two lines cross, we will call it the center of your head. This is going to be our driver's seat for our meditations. So would you please bring your attention to the center of your head? Your attention is you. And would you please come to the center of your head? Be in your third eye. From the center of your head, would you please say hello to your body? Recognize your body. Validate it. give it your attention. We can go days without saying hello to our body, unless it has pain, and then it will get our attention. Would you please say hello to your knees? From the center of your head, would you please say hello to your elbows? Would you please say hello to your shoulders? And breathe. From the center of your head, would you please be aware of the distance between you and your forehead? And breathe. From the center of your head, would you please now call your energy wherever you left it? If you left some of your energy in the past, in some conversation, in some problem you were solving that you didn't have time to finish, would you please call it back? Bring it to present time. Call your energy from the future. If you're anxious about something that's going to happen later on that you're trying to figure out, you put your energy, you send it to the future. Would you please call it back? Your body is your cosmic clue to present time. Your body is always in present time. So would you please call your energy, just make a postulate from the center of your head that your energy is going to come back and be all around your body, about 2 feet all around, the same shape that your physical body is. This is your spiritual body, your energy field. Own it. Allow it to be all around your body. Now from the center of your head, would you please look in front of you, about 3 feet in front of you, and look at the screen. You can see it as a screen, like a monitor, computer monitor, a TV screen, a movie screen. Doesn't matter. Yours will look like the way you want it to look like. Just see it. It's about 3 feet in front of you. With your eyes closed, from the center of your head, look at your screen. And would you please look at a reflection of yourself on that screen, sitting in that position you're sitting. A silhouette is good enough. Don't look for details. It's not necessary. And from the center of your head, identify the bottom of your spine on that screen. And right below that, consider another point that represents the center of the planet. Now would you please draw a line of energy and connect these 2 points together and go ahead and ground your body. And allow this grounding to be on release. Give this grounding the job of releasing any energy in your space that is not yours. Our body is designed to pick up energy here and there to read it, to see how it feels, but it's not designed to hold it. Would you please go ahead from the center of your head, look at yourself on that screen, grounded, releasing any energy that's not yours. Now I invite you please on that screen to create a rose. Allow this rose to represent heaven. Look at it. Look at its color. Look at its texture. Look at its stem. From the center of your head, would you please say hello to the fact that the only thing that's sitting in between you and that rose is a series of lies. The lies that tells you you cannot have this. The lies that tells you you are not good enough for it. Those are just lies. Now, would you please bring that rose a little bit close to yourself? As you bring this rose a little bit closer, would you allow your grounding core to release those lies? Release any energy that tells you you can't have this. And see how your body reacts to this rose as it comes close to you. Breathe. Breathe into this energy. Now would you please bring this rose a little bit closer yet? Again, allow your grounding core to release any energy, any lie, in any form that tells you you cannot have this. Breathe into this energy. Say hello to your body. see how it's reacting to this energy as it closes to you. Let your body get acquainted with this feeling. Your body talks to you with the language of emotion. Let it tell you how it feels to be close to heaven. Let your body get used to it. Let your body be able to have it. Bring this rose a little bit closer. Breathe into this energy. Let yourself get used to this energy. Own this energy. It's always been yours. Allow your grounding core to release any energy left that tells you you can't have this. Now breathe. Now would you please repeat after me, silently to yourself, "Dear God, I ask for a miracle today. I ask for your help so I can see myself as you created me. Amen." Breathe again. Allow your body to get used to this energy. Sit in this energy. Allow every cell of your body vibrate in this energy. Now go ahead and create a golden sun above your head. See it on the screen. See that the enormous golden sun is above your head on the screen. And allow this golden sun to come down and descend upon you and cover your head, your shoulder, your neck, your spinal cord, your hips, your leg, your knees, your feet. See yourself vibrating at gold. See that every single cell in your body vibrates at gold. Breathe into this energy. Take another deep breath. Go ahead and open your eyes and come out of trance. We're done.
Oh, that was very nice. So I just want to let people know, sign up the landing page for the 9-week course is, and that's www.youareaspirit.com/9steps. We need to open the line and see if anyone has some questions.
Sure, go ahead.
We have a question here about forgiveness. If someone is enraged because they feel betrayed for an ethical violation, although forgiveness would release the rage, isn't forgiveness overrated? Isn't that letting the person off the hook, so to speak?
I tell you a little story. Believe me, I'm not an angel. I'm mad at a lot of people all the time. So I know exactly what you're talking about. But let me tell you a little story. One day, my teacher was talking to me, and I was telling him something similar. And he says, "Kehan, are you in competition with God? Are you saying that if you could be a better God, why God is doing this?" Let me tell you this. By not forgiving, you are not doing anything to that person. You are just driving yourself crazy. Because imagine this. If I tell you something right now that makes you really mad at me, you know what are you going to do? You're going to take me home with you. You're going to have dinner with me. You're going to take a bath with me. You're going to take me to bed with you. You're going to wake up with me. You're going to have breakfast with me. You're going to chain yourself to me by not forgiving it. So you are not punishing anybody but yourself. Mm-hmm. And believe me, this is not something that you can just do because I said so. You have to bring yourself to a space where you could actually see that. You have to have certainty of it. Not because I say it, you cannot do that. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that. But I know there is a way that you can bring yourself to a space where you can actually see. And once you see it, you say, "I'm going to release it." Mm-hmm. So it takes...
These are the kinds of situations that test our faith in what's right and wrong, and what's justice, even in God. I mean, the question is, why should people who are unethical and willing to betray others, people who even betray the sick or the helpless, people who portray themselves as good people, get away with it?
You know what they do to you? They give you an opportunity to experience forgiveness. You have the right not to take the opportunity and wait for the next opportunity. Just like a beggar in the street or a homeless person in the street, they come your way. They are giving you the opportunity to experience abundance. You have the right not to take that opportunity and wait for the next time. You are not any worse person because you decide not to take the opportunity. You are still as perfect as you were if you did take the opportunity. It's nothing but a series of opportunities. You have all the right in the world to take the ones you wish and drop the ones you don't want because you're not ready for it. That's fine. If you're not ready to take this opportunity, don't. But I submit to you, don't feel bad about it because you are still an angel where somebody is waiting for today. Give yourself the love that you deserve, even though you are not at a space where you are ready to forgive. That's fine. That opportunity will always be there for you whenever you're ready. But if you wish to practice to get yourself closer to that point, I submit to you that meditation is a beautiful way of doing it.
Sometimes we let our experiences define us, unfortunately, as victims, and until we learn from experience and move on, we don't feel whole and happy again.
Please understand that from the other side, it's true too. If Joe was trying to hurt you yesterday, he was only hurting himself. But there is nobody else. You're just looking at yourself. You're looking at in your own universe. As you decide to take on, you come out of heaven to take on a physical life, what are you doing? You decide you're going to have a series of physical experiences. What are you going to do with the result of those experiences? There are three things you can do with them. You can either externalize them and say it was somebody else's fault. You can turn it into karma. Or you can own it. You can say, I created this experience, I am the owner of it, let me see why I did that and learn from it. Or the third thing you can do, you can absolutely deny it and say it never happened and cover it with unconscious energy. The only advantage you have when you see yourself as the creator of that experience is that if you created it, you can also change it. If you decide to externalize it, or if you decide to deny it, you take away your own power to change it. So it's a totally personal decision.
Kahan, we've come on the hour, so we need to close this. Is there any last thing you would want to say, an invitation to people?
Yes, I invite everybody to take steps towards heaven. So I invite everybody to close their eyes and wake up and this is my mission in life. This is my purpose of life. I would like to help everybody recognize themselves as spirits because that's who we are.
Well, thank you, Kahan.
Thank you.
And thank everyone for being on this call. And if you know anybody who might be interested in this workshop, please let them know about it. We can accommodate a great number of people.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great night, everybody.
Blessing.